outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gym.
Well, I had an hour and a half conversation yesterday with J.R.R. Tolkien.
Are you stepping into another world with me, another dimension, or how did you consult Mr. Tolkien?
It was in a dream, and
really,
yeah, it was in a dream, and it was one of those like eternal dreams. It seemed like it went on for 2 or 3 hours, but it could have been 2 or 3 seconds. The way dreams work, I have no idea. Yeah. Seemed lengthy. And I was in a coffee shop kind of environment in the middle of the woods.
Okay.
And a P-51 comes flying over and makes a low pass. And I look up and go, that's J.R.R. Tolkien flying that thing. I don't know how I knew that, because I don't know if I'd recognize him if I saw him on the street. And then he crashed it in a field. And then he came walking in. And we sat down and we talked for a long time about how the monetizing of art destroys it.
Ooh.
And the publishers and heirs who want to make the maximum amount of money from any product ruin the value of that product. It was a fascinating conversation. I don't remember all the details of it. I don't know why it was J.R.R. Tolkien, but I know it was a dream because we were on the same page about everything. Whatever one of us would say something, we'd go, yes, yes. And then they would expand on it. And yes, yes. And I got up. I think I woke up about 4 o'clock in the morning from that dream. So I went to my office and recorded my recollections so I wouldn't go back to sleep and forget them all. It was fascinating though. Had a great time.
Oh, that's awesome. That honestly sounds like a conversation that Tolkien would get into. I mean,
it does. I did some research to see if he was ever a pilot, like in World War I or World War II, and he wasn't. He was in World War I as an infantry guy.
Okay. If you had been in a pub and smoking a pipe, then I would have known for sure that it was Tolkien, because then you would have just been a part of the Inkling, and I would have been insanely jealous.
Yeah, there was no pipes and no other folks there.
Okay.
But it was a great conversation. It just makes your head spin in terms of, we've talked about before on here, but whenever it's okay. Like you write a book, you want to sell a book. I have no trouble with people doing that. I do it. But when you try to get the maximum amount of yield from something, and it can be influencers on, you know, followers and whatever, somebody has got to build a clientele for something that involves money, it ceases to be more genuine. Yeah. It ceases to be art. It becomes more product.
Hmm. I got into an interesting conversation today with an individual, and we were talking briefly about art, and a question got posed about whether or not AI could generate art. And I got to thinking about that, and it's like, I don't think that's possible, because AI is just pulling from other human experiences and other human reflection and other human references. And art is so much more. It's an expression of heart and memory and beauty, and filtered through the unique mind of an individual and just all their different contexts. I don't know. It was just an intriguing thought that I was kind of mulling over. And especially when you think about, like, posing your question about art, how money impacts it, right? I mean, I think so often, even now that in my industry, AI is writing these incredible papers, and yet they're soulless. There's no experience behind them. There's lots of research, but there's no heart. There's no intention. There's no connection behind it. And yeah, you can make money off of it. Yeah, you can do content creation with it, but
and a lot of people are.
And a lot of people are. A lot of people are.
But it's kind of like religion. It can do a facsimile of art.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, religion can do a facsimile of a relationship with God, but it's not the same thing as really having one and really engaging it. It's going to be interesting to see where our culture goes over the next few years.
Yes, it will. So you just got back from a trip up in Alaska, correct?
We had a 10-day, 3 days on land, 7 days on the ocean, and a cruise from near Anchorage down to Canada. So,
yeah. Okay, okay.
We had a great time celebrating our 50th and hanging out and not having to fix meals or do dishes. And and the food was awesome on this cruise. It was really, really good. And so we had a great time. I only gained a pound, got back, jumped on the scale. I was terrified. Went, wow, picked up a pound. That's nothing.
So they didn't have good chocolate cake then on this ship.
The chocolate cake left something to be desired, but they did have great ice cream.
Okay.
There were ways to get around the lack of, until the last day, they had kind of a cake delight. They had all these layer cakes, like 40 different varieties.
And oh, geez. You
could cut a piece of this, piece of that, piece of this. And that was awesome.
Okay. Did you, so our last podcast, which contrary to your belief about the 42 minute limit on it, it looks like people were willing to hang in with us for a full over like hour and 20 minutes or however long we talked through that thing.
But in two different parts. They didn't get it all at once.
Ah, but those were people who were watching on the Facebook Live, not listening to our
listening people to the watch it live. They get the whole thing in one dose.
I know. Yeah. Crazy people.
Whoa. Oh, I forget. We're not trying to monetize this anyway. So yes. You can call them crazy people.
So any reflection, as especially as you and I had spent some time processing through just what you'd learned and some things that you had explored over the last 50 years, did you reflect while you were on the cruise at all about what the last 50 years has held? Or was it more just enjoying time together and celebrating the fact that 50 years has come?
Yeah, it was more celebrating. We process our marriage every day on walks we go on and being together. So there's not a day we're not talking about what we're grateful for and what's shifted in our thinking and what still is shifting in our thinking. So we're always doing that, but we didn't sit down like have a real retrospective of the whole 50 years.
Yeah.
We just continued the journey that we're on of discovering life at a new level.
Hmm.
That was cool. I'm Wayne Jacobson, by the way.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
I want to welcome you to this episode of The God Journey. So best thing you heard this week, you got one?
I've got a couple of them, actually. So a couple of them came from a podcast that you sent me. And then one, I had a really weird, like one of those really bizarre moments where I was doing a coaching session with an individual and we were talking about marriage and relationship. And I found words coming out of my mouth that were definitely not my own. And because I found myself like furiously scribbling them down and having to really chew on them for a little while. But it actually came off of your conversation about not having your spouse feel like they're a victim of your decisions. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that came up, expressing our desires is an invitation, not a verdict. And that just landed so hard for me because growing up there, especially in more of your traditional conservative patriarchal system, it's when the husband speaks, they are the head over the household. And so basically their voice is therefore God. And so when the husband speaks, then it is the verdict on whatever is going to happen. And there was no space for desire, for needs, for personal interests, because once that one person that was at the top of the system, once they voiced their opinion, nobody else's mattered. It just mattered what their opinion was. And man, to hear that, to share my desires, to share the things with Jess that are on my heart, and for her to do the same, it's an invitation, not a verdict of this is how it's going to be, or I'm sharing my need. And so that's a verdict that you have to adhere to. And that, man, it's messing with me. That one dropped in my lap this morning and I've just been reflecting on it all day.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. It's an invitation, not a verdict. And otherwise, particularly in our culture where people feel awkward saying no, particularly if you love somebody, you've got to always say yes. And then you got people doing things out of this obligated, I better do it, not I really want to, not I'm wholeheartedly involved with it. It really robs the relationship.
It does. It
completely, for both. It falls for the person who's getting the reaction they want from somebody, but it's not coming from a wholehearted place. And from the person who's feeling forced into going along, it's not helping either side.
Well, and there's no us in it. I mean, because especially for me, when I'm processing my relationship with Jess, when I would be in that space, then there's no exploration. There's no curiosity about what's going on in Jess's heart, that I'm not seeing her for who she is, and vice versa. There's no us in that process. And so it would be very easy if I wasn't married to a very strong, confident, independent woman who is like, oh, no, that's not how that's going to go. I will not be your victim. Very graciously. But man, to say, no, this is an invitation to a greater understanding of us versus it's my way or the highway or your way or the highway, especially when expressing a need. It's that idea of, okay, you have a need, I have a need here. So Lord, what does it look like for those needs, those heart desires, that healing, whatever it might be? What does it look like for us to go through that and find a deeper experience of relational satisfaction?
Yeah, or what somebody called this week on a podcast I listened to, relational joy, and talked about so few people know what relational joy is because they're negotiating power or they're trying to get what they want, gratification, instead of looking for ways to serve and love in a deeper way. My best thing I heard this week came from that same podcast I just referred to.
Yeah.
And it said this, a boy's question of the world is, what have you got for me? Gratification again. A man's question of the world is, what do you need from me? And primarily we're talking about growing up as white male in a patriarchal society where white males have options that other people don't have.
Yeah.
And we like to think they do, but it's not always true.
Yeah.
And so the idea, I definitely grew up that way. I definitely grew up with, what do I want to get out of the world? What does it need to do? How can I use it to get what I need for me?
Yeah.
And over the course of my journey, it has really shifted to, no, what is Sarah, what do you need for me today? Jesus, what do you need from me today? Relationships I have, what do they need from me today? It really changes the whole orientation of life. And his larger point is, one leads to relational joy. And the other leads to momentary gratification, but for long-term pain.
Yes.
Because it hurts. And the podcast I'm referring to was called Modern Love. It's a New York Times interview with Terry Real. And boy, he's got a book called Us, after we talked about our journey to us the last couple of podcasts, this is the next book I think Sarah and I are going to be reading, because I'm kind of interested to see where he goes.
Yeah.
The subtitle of Us is Getting Past You and Me to Build a More Loving Relationship.
Yeah, I found the podcast very intriguing. There was a few things that really stood out to me. One, this was really intriguing. He says, you don't tell truth to power under a patriarchal system. That was really intriguing to me, especially, and I, not to go there extensively, but thinking a little bit about our political system and where we're at in our political culture at the moment, or even thinking back to religious settings or institutions or businesses, often there's that patriarchy system where, here's the top and then it works its way down, and that you don't have the freedom to speak truth to that leadership. And that's spooky. If you can't share truth and that's actually squashed or told to keep silent because of that system of structure and power, that is a little unnerving, because that's when truth, especially when thinking about kingdom truth, that's when God, I've found, tends to get a little claustrophobic and starts breaking down walls and punching holes in our perceptions. And it can be incredibly disruptive.
Yeah, it can be, and needs to be, I guess.
Yes.
But our society is not bent that way. In fact, no. The context of the interview, because this is a guy that's been doing couples counseling for 42 years. And he said, I choose sides. I get in there, listen to what they're saying, and often turns to the man and say, you've got this wrong. And she's right, you're wrong. And I'm going, yeah, that violates a whole lot of norms in therapeutic counseling. But he said mostly it is because we take young men, boys that are growing up in the world, and we teach them to be disconnected and independent in a way that keeps them from relational intimacy.
Yeah.
So they have this deep need for connection because God made us that way, but they have covered that all up with achievement and success and other things, or the failure of those things, and then compensate with drugs or alcohol or whatever. And they just it leaves them without a sense of this deep connection, what he called relational joy, which that's a great term. I love that. I would summarize that being what Sarah and I are leaning into in this season of our life is there's a newfound relational joy in that Sarah has opened up a whole part of her life. It's been open to her, and then she's been opening it to me. And I get to really ask every day, what does she need from me? What do you need from me today? It's not about what I need from her or what I've got to get here. It's really, what do you need from me to get through this day? And there were some things on this trip where Sarah's discomfort level gets like, are we going to get back to the ship in time? Are we going to miss the ship? And we're on a tour from the ship. So yeah, we're going to get back on time before it leaves.
Yeah.
But still, those things cause her a certain amount of stress. And so just, what do you need from me to find a way to be relaxed today instead of having all this anxiety over something that could possibly go wrong?
See, and that's one of my favorite lines out of the interview was this quote, you cannot be invulnerable and intimate at the same time.
Yeah.
I really like, that landed so hard with me because especially as I was thinking about my own journey with armor and my, you know, my missile silo bunker that I hid in order to stay, to be invulnerable, that there was no way that people could access me. But then when I am now in a committed, loving relationship that is safe and that is rewriting those trauma experiences, so having those corrective experiences, and yet then all of a sudden my bunker now is a hindrance. I can't be intimate with the person that I want to have that relational joy with, because I've walled myself off, I've bunkered myself off. And so to have God untangle that and break down those walls so that that intimacy can occur. But yeah, it's definitely more vulnerable, absolutely. But to be able to have that shared experience of intimacy is so much more worth it than the feeling that, oh, well, I'm safe because you can't access me, you can't get to me.
Yeah. What I love about what he said, the backdrop of this conversation from the standpoint of the interviewer is that there's a toxic masculinity asserting itself in these days, that our role models for young men are not well-connected, seasoned people.
Yeah.
They're bullies who seek to dominate. And there's a whole thing, particularly in the whole conservative Christian world, that's gone back to the traditional power dynamic where the man's the head of the home, and braggadocious and bullying and dominant. And that's the models we have. In fact, he says in the thing, which I love this, he said, we have no models for healthy relational masculinity. Models are all dominant and bullying. And there's a whole segment of men kind of who felt disconnected, who feel that they're not getting what they deserve, who are finding those tools to be what it is to be a man, when it's completely the opposite. He says, what women are asking of men is rationality, intimacy, opening your heart, sharing your feelings, being responsible, which is the opposite of traditional masculinity.
See, and I actually had a really hard time when I heard that portion of the podcast, because I would fight back. And in some regards, I get where he's coming from. And in regards to there being models of what it looks like to really live out healthy masculinity. But as somebody who has a master's in marriage and family therapy, who's practiced in mental health, who also specialized in masculine identity formation in modern culture, I would
say... Wow, put all your cards on the table, would you, Kyle?
I would say, I would argue that there are healthy models out there. Are they the ones that are broadcasting and they are the ones with the biggest bullhorns? No, but man, I can list several men that I know that live this out, that model this in such an authentic and genuine way. And it's not overbearing. It's not domineering. It invites people into a deeper, more wholehearted experience. But the challenge is that I feel like those individuals more are on the fringe because again, they're not each one of the individuals that I have in my mind, as I see their faces, as I'm thinking about them, they're not monetizing it. They're not toting themselves in as an expert. They're not brandishing some, I am an expert in this identity. They're just living out their lives and allowing other people to come alongside of them and experience what that's like. It's not as public, it's not as accessible, but it's definitely happening in our culture.
I think he would agree with that point because when he says there's not good models, I think he's talking about in the national interest, in politics and entertainment and whatever, you don't have good examples for young men to see. So a lot of it, what's athletics or whatever, it's power and dominance and being unaffected by things and repressing your feelings and moving on with. So I don't think you disagree with that, but I do agree. I don't think there's a lot of national models that you can hold up because they're not playing the same games. They're not playing the games that to dominate a region of life or to dominate something. The seven mountain mandate thing, which we've talked about before, is all dominating the culture in a way that's supposed to change it. And it's causing just the opposite. It's causing an anxiety in people, a desire to dominate. The people we gravitate to politically are bullies and dominating. He calls the delusion of domination, which I think is a great
title. That was awesome.
Because it looks like you're getting your way. And the one point he made about patriarchy, when he talks about, I know some people don't love that term because it's kind of like, well, that's a woke term. And it is misused in a lot of circles.
Yeah.
But the idea, if you're white male in America, you have advantages other people don't have. And we've had thousands of years of where men have dominated women and women have just silently, quietly go along. But what he said, because she asked him at one point, do you really, why would you focus on white males? Like they're the group that's had all the power. Why do they need help? You know, the other people need the help. And he goes, patriarchy destroys both at the top and the bottom.
Yes.
And he's concerned about our loss of masculine, and you've talked a lot about this, boys growing up confused or kids in the generation. And I've kind of don't know a lot of males that are lost in this way, but I have seen the resurgence of those who are trying to take domination as a way to be more manly. And Hollywood has taken that away by making men wimps and despise and all that kind of stuff. And I'm so unconvinced by the argument that's a problem and that we really need to bolster men with more power and more reason to get their way about things. Instead of what he was talking about as to how do you learn to find intimacy, vulnerability, connection, because that's what we were made for. And if you don't have that, you will compensate for the lack of it in very destructive ways.
It's interesting. Have you heard of the trad movement? Is that a movement you've heard?
Okay. I have. So but not everybody who's listening probably has.
So there's this idea or there's this conversation that's happening a lot right now about the trad mom and the trad dad or trad wife and trad dad world, where it's this movement back to, it usually incorporates a combination of homeschooling, conservative value systems, moving back to almost a homesteading, self-reliance, organic, clean eating, no vaccines or minimal vaccines, that type of holistic care type experience. And there's also some conversation about it relationally. And what does it look like to shift back into that traditional husband and wife conservative perspective? And it's been really intriguing for me to watch this as a resurgence, because initially in my journey, and when I was really trying to explore what does it mean to be a man in today's world, because I looked at the institution of Christianity and didn't see a lot of great examples there. I looked at my dad, and at the time, I was looking at his life through the knothole of my own pain. And so I didn't see a lot of value there either. Now, later on, I would I would challenge that because I think there's a lot of great things that he lives out in the world. But then I also looked at the secular examples, and all of those examples were very egocentric. They were all about dominance, their own personal gain. And so I just remember really asking God, like, Lord, what does it look like to be a man for you, a man of your heart? You know, like, because people often point to, well, David is a man after God's own heart. Yes, he was also a warrior. He was a poet. He was a womanizer. I mean, where do we go here, you know, with some of these character examples? And so there's just this real challenge of like, okay, what does it mean to align with this healthy sense of identity and masculinity? And man, it's intriguing watching this new movement surge back of the conservative, the trad movement, the back to these more traditional systems. And what do you think is motivating it? Like, as I'm watching it, I've got some ideas, but I'd love to get your feedback on why is this movement happening in a culture? Because it's primarily happening with millennials. It's my generation that is really embracing this movement pretty heavily.
And it's been going on so long that there's a lot of talk now about trad wives who've been doing a lot of influencer kind of posting.
Oh, yeah.
That's leaving the movement. Just kind of didn't work out so beautifully well. I wonder if it's the uncertainty of our time and the darkness of our time and trying to cope with it by finding something that seems more secure, more predictable, more whatever.
Yeah.
But I think it's failing. I think it's failing the people that are involved, particularly the women first, because he says, it's part of this podcast, that what women are asking of men is to be more connected, more wholehearted, more intimate, more real. And men are reacting to the loss of the cultural power that was theirs alone for a long time, with going back to, again, dominance and bullying and trying to get to be the one in charge and get the gratification they want for themselves.
Yeah.
Out of their relationship to their wife or family. And so I think it's part of that uncertainty and looking for predictability. And now this system has failed me, that system has failed me. So let's go back to something more steeped in our human experience. But then it denies so much of the growth that comes.
I think that's the question that I have with it is, are we taking this desire to get back to, because I appreciate some of the value systems that the trad movement is embracing. So slower pace of life, more margin in your life, more emphasis on relational connection and family health, more intentionality in investing in community. I mean, there's some really good things that I think are there. My question has been, are we integrating the wisdom and the lessons that we've learned from previous generations that embraced some of those values, embodied some of those values, but then also embodied a lot of repression and relational unhealth and some abuse and some things in those regards. Have we learned how to meld those two ideas together? Or are we just simply reverting back to a previous, more simple time?
Well, time will tell. I don't really know. Again, some people are already spilling out of that movement because it was unsatisfying in some ways. I like what you say. I think there are positive elements to the things that people are seeking. But in the long run, if what I'm seeking is not a wholehearted relational connection with my partner, then we're going to end up destroying each other on the basis of power. And at one part early on in the podcast, they were talking about how much it's mostly the man's fault when there's a problem in a marriage, because he says men are so ill-prepared to handle life. We've been raised not so much with the desire for connection and honesty and kindness and helping young boys become men. We taught them to ignore their feelings, to not count, to discount them, to just man up and do the right thing and do, usually in a forceful way. And so we haven't prepared well. And I think men who are learning how to be relationally more whole and make room for their partner and to love tenderly and kindly, to be in touch with their feelings and to share. He talked about, at one point, Terry did, about amplifying men's emotions, because they mostly have repressed them to the point where there's this little feeling back there, but they don't say it. They say the thing that they're supposed to say, and he'll call them on it in very graphic terms sometimes. Yeah. That's a lie, and what are you really feeling? And helping amplify what they really feel, which may not be right or good, but to get in touch with their feelings is important again. And I think when I grew up, 60, 70 years ago, I see a lot of that in the whole male thing. Male doesn't cry, you know, man up, stop crying, don't be a baby. It's all the things that make you less relationally attuned. Mm. And I do see the journey of living love for me. And that's what I love about this podcast, because I go, man, those are things I have learned, and Sarah and I have learned together over the last 30 years of going on a bit of a different journey, not one by our choice initially, but yeah. Now so grateful for, because I do look at those things saying, I'm much more in tune with Sarah now. I'm much more in tune with what my role is in terms of the home and in terms of having that deep connection of love and honesty and compassion without manipulating each other.
Yeah, I think it's intriguing because there's this, the argument that some of these like traditional get back to the he-man, you know, chest pounder movements that are out there right now. Like I watched this one like boot camp video, promo video, and I don't even know how it got on my feed, but my yuck meter made my entire stomach flip. It was so hard. I was just like, oh, that is gross.
Wow. And, yeah.
Because what they were talking about, again, is making men dangerous and invulnerable to feeling pain, to feeling like they are, can be taken advantage of, et cetera, whatever it might be. And that was the piece to me, is it's like the men that I know that are living this out well and are modeling this well, it's not that they don't have adventures. It's not that they aren't quote unquote dangerous or risk takers or like adventure adrenaline, etc. But they are also open, relationally connected, and vulnerable. They are living a balance of those two things. And man, it's cool when I get to see that lived out, when I see people owning that and moving in those spaces. Because when you talk about the whole idea of iron sharpening iron, and that was always like especially in the John Eldridge camps and some of those things, like that was one of their favorite taglines or whatever. Or Mark Driscoll is like, my favorite Jesus is a warrior God with his cloak dipped in the blood of his enemies riding on a horse. You know, that's my God. That's my Jesus, you know? And yet when I watch men who are moving in a desire for wholeheartedness and a desire to live out healthy masculinity in the world, they are deeply connected with their spouse. They are open, honest, and vulnerable with a group of men that they've been doing life with. And they're doing it in the context of community. And man, it is dynamic. It is powerful. It's disruptive. It's incredible to watch and be a part of.
And what would you say to a young man, a millennial, who's maybe grown up feeling disoriented, unconnected to their emotions, gravitating toward a more dominating, bullying persona, thinking, I've got to get what's mine? What would you say that, how would he learn to live differently in the world?
I think the first thing is to completely dispel the notion that emotion equates to weakness, or that the only socially acceptable emotion is anger or rage or aggression. Like you can be such a dynamic man in the world and feel the full range of emotions, and that doesn't negate who you are. That doesn't take your man card, as some people would say. No, not at all. That doesn't disqualify you. And so I would encourage them, first and foremost, find a couple of guys or a group of guys that are living out a pursuit of a similar type of life as you are. You don't all need to agree on everything. You don't need to all come from the exact same backgrounds, nothing like that. But for me, the way that God really unpacked what it meant to live out of healthy masculinity, it was done in the context of varying groups of men over the entirety of my lifetime. There was a combination of guys my same age, some guys that are younger than me, and some guys that are older, quite a bit older than me. And so there was this healthy combination of sages and peers and people that I was pouring into as well. And man, that's where God really unpacked my journey and my process of what it meant to pursue him on this earth and to really live out those kingdom values. And I haven't met a man yet that I would say is living out a wholehearted life that doesn't have a rich community around him. Hmm. Of even just two or three guys that he can let his guards down around, that he can be himself around, and he can show up without fear in their presence and do life with them.
Wow. Yeah, I think that's a pretty powerful option if people have it. If not, developing those kinds of relationships and finding someone that can help you. Because I think part of it is you've got to come to grips with what are your true feelings.
Yes.
What are the things you have repressed and pushed down because they make you tear up or they make you struggle? And having somebody find that again when they've repressed it for so long. For me, that happened through a connection to Jesus that allowed me to find out I was loved and that I could be honest and struggle with him. You know, I went from a guy who rarely teared up over situations around me to one who regularly is touched deeply by things going on around me and people. I credit a lot of that to, I had the older sages in my life that were part of that, so a lot of peers. But I also have found that in Jesus's loving me in the wholeheartedness comes from, first of all, being connected to the heart you have. And maybe not all your feelings and emotions are healthy. They're not necessarily all based on truth, but having a connection to them and to him allows them to move in a direction that's more healthy.
Oh, I mean, he has to be the author of that. I mean, because he is the author of life and life in the full. And so anything apart from that, to be honest, is just an imposter. It's a shell of the invitation that he offers. Because I would agree. I mean, a lot of my even my ability to be able to start to trust and connect with other men in community started with the experience that I had with Father, where I felt completely seen and completely loved at the same time. And that experience opened a door for him to take me on a journey that just completely unraveled a lot of those guards and a lot of those misconceptions of the being emotionally void is to be strong or to be invulnerable.
Yeah. Or deem be told, you know, you don't be a crybaby. Yeah. Don't, you know, all that kind of rhetoric. One of the things he said that I think touched Sarah and I as we were talking about this to Sarah too, says family pathology rolls from generation to generation like a fire in the woods, taking down everything in its path until one person in one generation has the courage to turn and face the flames. That person brings peace to their ancestors and spares the children to follow, which I'm not sure how it brings peace to the ancestors that are gone, but I think what we've enjoyed most about what Sarah has been through is that she's one of those people that stopped a pathology in her family that had been rolling down through generations. Terry Real talks about being abused by his dad, who was abused by his dad in very graphic terms.
Yeah.
And it takes the courage of one person. And I know people like this who've grown up in family or religious systems that are hurtful and harmful, and finally stood up against the flames, and some got really whacked for it, good, by their family, by their religious system, whatever. But they stopped that pathology in their time. It didn't go on to their children or people following afterwards. And I think that's a powerful thing. And I think Sarah, however she negotiated her trauma, even when she wasn't aware that it was there, she had chosen kindness in her life, and she didn't pass that on to our children.
Yeah.
She did stop it in her generation, which I think is just so powerful when people do that.
Yeah, and when he was talking about that, I I was reflecting back on just my own personal journey and was thinking about how I know that when the Holy Spirit collided with my life and was starting that healing, untangling process. So I turned into the flame and was willing to look at the fire, to endure the fire as God was working through that with me. I don't know if because I did that, it started a chain through the men in my family or not, or if God was doing the same work in their life simultaneously and I just couldn't see it because of my pain at the time. I don't know. Yeah. But right. What I do know is that as I turned and faced that flame, that allowed me to gain a different perspective of my dad's heart and he and I to be able to rebuild a relationship that I didn't ever think would be able to be rebuilt. But it also allowed me to see a snapshot of my grandpa that I had not seen until his later years. Cause I always viewed him as being very cold, very distant, not relationally available at all until roughly about the last 5-6 years of his life. And in that time, as he would sit and listen to conversations that my grandma and I would have about what God was doing in my life. And I could always see like the wheels were turning. And then eventually he started speaking some of the things that he was thinking. And there, man, anytime he spoke in the midst of those conversations, it was like a bomb of revelation just got dropped in my lap. And just thinking like, man, like that was awesome. Because here's my grandpa, saw him cry multiple times, but it was only in the last 3 or 4 years of his life. The entirety of the rest of the time that I saw him and knew of him, I had never seen him cry. And then it was these last few years of his life where there's just a lot of movement that I saw of the Holy Spirit in his life as well, where he softened, he was more open, vulnerable, he was more engaged in that relational process. And it was powerful, very, very powerful.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, it's a podcast worth listening to. I'll link it at the bottom of the podcast notes if other people want to listen to it or pick up the book. His name is Terry Real. The book is called Us, Getting Past You and Me to Build a More Loving Relationship, which I think might be helpful. I also want to make this note before we go. We've got a need in Kenya that's come up. 22,000. It's emergency. They're going to lose some things. I'll write more about it on my blog this week, so you can check it out there too. If you've got some extra money to help us help them rescue one of the enterprises we left them with, and the government's clamped down some new fees on whatever, and now they're behind, or they're going to lose this petrol station we helped build 20 years ago now.
Oh, geez.
18 years ago. I guess they were supposed to be filling out some form from 2015 onward. And I guess nobody's been doing it. Nobody knew it had to be done. And now the government's broke. So it's gone back over all these things and levied. They've already shut the business down.
Wow.
And if they don't come up with 22,000 in 14 days, then their government's going to auction off their business.
What?
To satisfy the debt. Yeah.
Because Kenya's broke. The government is broke. And so they're now going after their citizens.
Oh, always. Yeah.
Wow.
So we hopefully can find some money to help save it. We got to do it quick. We're going to lose it all. So if you can help us, please check that out and let us know.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.